All eyes were on Iowa earlier this week as the state's Republican caucuses took place on Monday night. The Associated Press declared former President Donald Trump the winner early in the night. He won by a big margin, taking home over 50% of the votes, with Florida Governor Ron DeSantis and former U.N. Ambassador Nikki Haley coming in second and third, splitting most of the rest. The caucuses saw a lower turnout than usual, with just 110,000 Republicans turning out to vote, under 15% of Iowa Republicans. Our next guest is here for a look at the meaning of the results and a look ahead at the presidential primary season. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have thoughts on the results in Iowa? Were you surprised by them? Are you happy or disappointed to see former President Trump do well in the state? If you are an Iowa Republican voter, you can hear us there, some of you. Did you go to a caucus and cast your ballot? What are your thoughts on what came out of it? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Kathleen Dolan is a distinguished professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, co-editor-in-chief of the American Journal of Political Science. Kathy, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you very much.
I guess the big question was a big surprise going to come out of Iowa earlier this week? And the answer is no. No surprise came out. Were these the results pretty you and everyone were watching for?
Yes, the result on Monday night was really no surprise. Former President Trump had been up significantly in the polls. Neither Governor DeSantis nor former Ambassador Haley seemed to be making much traction in most polls that we've seen. So it really was, you know, between the two of them, a fight for sort of second and third. And I think the only question was the size of former President Trump's margin of victory.
Now, the deal with caucuses and the Iowa caucus, I think in particular, was, okay, this is one. It's not about the advertising or the national profile. It's, you know, the candidate going from county to county, meeting people, making connections, blah, blah, blah. Is that not true anymore?
Well, you know, they say that it's not about the advertising, and it is, because, I mean, the point of the caucuses is to get in a room and try to convince mm-hmm. your friends and neighbors to support your candidate. And that's exactly what television ads do. So the Iowa caucuses are, you know, sort of a historical anachronism that we're still using. People in Iowa certainly like the attention. They like to be first in the nation. They try to preserve, you know, the sort of special nature of the caucus. But, you know, the candidates are expected in most circumstances to spend a lot of time in the state and court voters individually. But, you know, endorsements from elites and television ad campaigns and those sorts of things certainly help as well.
There have been arguments over the years for either party. Why does Iowa get to go first? Does it really represent the country? Does the caucus model give us a good sense of what's going on? Democrats dropped it as the first thing after kind of the fiasco 4 years ago, where there's a lot of trouble, you know, counting the caucus ballots. Is there a case to be made that maybe Iowa shouldn't be first for either party?
Yes, I think the answer from my perspective as a political scientist is absolutely yes. Iowa is one of the less representative states in the United States. The people who take part in the caucuses are among the less representative Iowans. And so we had an enormously small number, enormously small, that's not the right thing to say, 110,000 people in a country of 335 million have, you know, set off this process, and everybody's like, well, it's over. Okay, it's done. And, you know, it's an incredibly unrepresentative group of people. The caucuses themselves are, you know, somewhat problematic from a democracy perspective, you know, and democratic with a small D, as opposed to the alternative, which is the primary elections that most states use, that generally get much higher turnout, that generally make it a lot easier for people to participate. And so I would argue, yes, I think that Iowa is probably not, shouldn't necessarily be the bellwether.
Kathleen Dolan is with us from UW-Milwaukee, political scientist there. We are talking about The presidential primary campaign kicked off for the Republicans with the Iowa caucus earlier this week. New Hampshire coming up early next week. You could join in with your thoughts, your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you think former President Trump has this all locked up? Do you see that as a good or bad thing? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Kathy, you mentioned some people came out of Iowa saying, yep, well, this is done. Is it? Is there anything that could shake things up in New Hampshire or beyond that makes this not a guaranteed renomination for former President Trump?
Probably not at this point. You know, it will take the former president until sometime in early March, you know, if we get through the Super Tuesday primaries, to have enough delegates locked up through this primary and caucus process to really be assured that he will get the nomination. But even in this short term, you know, we're moving on to New Hampshire next Tuesday. Governor DeSantis's campaign, you know, doesn't look to be strong. He won't do well in New Hampshire. He is unlikely to do well in South Carolina. The super PAC that is supporting his campaign started issuing layoff notices to employees this morning. So, you know, he has said that he has enough money to stay in it through South Carolina, but that's just a couple of weeks from now. So I think it's, you know, I think there's a very small window for him. I think former Ambassador Haley, you know, is projected to do well in New Hampshire. I can't imagine she wins New Hampshire unless the independent voters in New Hampshire who are allowed to vote, you know, are coming out strong. But even if she does well in a second place and keeps things close to the former president, you know, she still has a long road to go herself. She, as the former governor of South Carolina, is still lagging badly in the polls there. And if you don't win or come, you know, really exceed expectations in some early contests, there is a momentum, you know, that builds behind a single candidate who keeps winning contests. And then it's just impossible to keep up in terms of money and attention. And so I think we'll know sooner rather than later. But I think we know where it's headed.
I want to talk about that a little bit. Now, just over 3 years ago, President Trump, after losing the election in November 2020, did something no U.S. president has done, rejected the outcome of the election, launched a long campaign in courts and recounts and pressure on local elected officials and the vice president, and convened a demonstration to persuade Congress and the vice president to overturn the results of his election loss. How does somebody come from that to being the presumptive nominee a few years later? A lot of people are spilling a lot of ink on this question. Kathy, wanted to hear what you think about that.
Well, what I would say is that, as you say, everything you said that former President Trump did after the 2020 election is unprecedented in our history. But you have to think about the fact that he has been in the public psyche since he started his campaign in 2015. So he spent 4 years as president. He spent 4 years denying that he isn't president. And that's really been 8 years for his step-by-step, inch-by-inch, you know, sort of capture and solidifying his control of the contemporary Republican Party. You know, if you look at where we are now with one state's events behind us, the number of sitting governors and members of Congress and other elected officials who have already endorsed former President Trump for the nomination is itself unprecedented. You hear people talk about him having captured the Republican Party, and it is true. I mean, he came out today, or somebody in his campaign came out today and said that people who have not yet endorsed him have 2 weeks to do so, or it will be remembered that they did not. And so, you know, former President Trump has solidified a hold on a national political party in a way that we have not seen, certainly in a very, very long time.
And a survey of Iowa caucus goers here, 3 in 10 said they believed that Joe Biden had been legitimately elected. So by my math, 7 in 10 said they didn't. Basically, a decent part of a party has embraced an alternative reality as they go to the caucus or the polls.
Yes, yes. And, you know, that poll, that pre-caucus poll that you're citing, it did say better than 6 and 10% of respondents did not believe that President Biden was legally elected. But keep in mind that you had 110,000 people participate in the caucuses. The people who said that they did not believe in President Biden's election tended to be the oldest of the voters. They tended to be the people who called themselves very conservative. They were the evangelical voters, and they were more likely male. So it's a piece of a very small group of people. Now, having said that, we see national public opinion polls that show us that 40 to 50 and upwards percent of Republicans in general also believe that. And what we have to accept as a political society is, as I said, you know, from the structural perspective, former President Trump has captured the Republican Party, but he has captured a good percentage of the Republican base and the Republican voters. And so we don't know what's going to happen in November. I mean, presuming he's the nominee, we don't know what will happen in the November election. But we know that there is a very steady core of Republican voters who believe his lies. They believe, you know, the things that he has told them for 8 years now. They believe what their media are telling them. And it is a very challenging reality for us to accept as a political society, regardless of the candidate you support and regardless of the party you might support, the diminished basis of shared truth that we have as a society is incredibly dangerous.
Kathleen Dolan is with us, distinguished professor of political science at UW-Milwaukee. We're talking about the results of the Iowa caucus and what's coming up for the Republican presidential nomination quest after former President Trump carried the state's Republican caucus goers. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Want to hear your thoughts on the likelihood of a Trump re-nomination as the Republican candidate? Do you think it is going to happen no matter what? Are you glad? If so, or are you worried? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk now with political science professor Kathleen Dolan about the outcome of the Iowa caucus and the Republican presidential nomination field. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your questions. That's 800-642-1234. When I say the words Biden-Trump rematch, how does that make you feel? Do you want to see that in November? Join in at 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Let's bring out a caller now. Pat is with us in Three Lakes. Pat, hi.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call. I think one of the reasons, and I have a comment. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons I believe that Donald Trump didn't have to spend a lot of time in Iowa is because the evangelical church preached his message for him. A lot of the people in evangelical church and others, I guess, believe that he's anointed by God. And whether it's a separation of church and state is a question for other people above my pay grade to answer. But I do know that his message is preached in the evangelical churches, some of them. And I even, on TV today, I was watching the Jim Baker show because the rest of the comedies were over. And he preached Donald Trump anointed by God for half the show. So,
Pat, thanks a lot for the call. Kathy, strong evangelical support for President Trump. If you'd said 10 years ago, Donald Trump is going to be the favorite candidate of evangelical white conservative Christians, I don't know. I don't think anybody would have believed that. But here we are. What are your thoughts on how that's shaken out?
Well, I think that it is another example of the sort of upside down world that we are living in the last 8 years. And again, inch by inch, step by step, three Supreme Court justices at a time. Former President Trump has captured many evangelical voters. He campaigns very explicitly on the idea that he is responsible for the overturn of the right to an abortion in the case Roe versus Wade. He said just the other day, I appointed three justices who helped to overturn that. That was because of me. And there are, you can read interviews with evangelicals who will say that, there are aspects of the former president's life that do not sort of fit with their ideology, but they have higher goals and higher values. And among those were was the successful overturning of the right to abortion. The caller is not wrong that there is an increasing segment of the evangelical movement that wants to present and paint the former president as ordained by God, as, sort of the embodiment of God's work on earth, and that is taking hold, and that is something that his campaign is happy to capitalize on. So you're right that nobody saw this coming, but it is another example of the sort of increased control that he has over the party and its faithful.
Thanks for the call, Pat, at 800-642-1234. I want to briefly look at the Democratic side of things. Kathy, no Democratic caucus in Iowa. I think that was the plan. New Hampshire, President Biden isn't on the ballot. That's not really a thing for Democrats. There have been a couple challengers announced, a congressman, Dean Phillips, and some others. What's going on in the Democratic side of things? Presumably an incumbent president has a real inside track here.
Yes, of course. excuse me, callers and listeners may remember that after the 2020 primary season, where South Carolina was really the state that solidified now President Biden's path to the nomination, he and many other members of the Democratic Party and the Democratic literal party structure and the leaders, came to believe that Iowa and New Hampshire really shouldn't go first because of their small and unrepresentative nature, even on the Democratic side. And so the Iowa is not caucusing, obviously, as we saw. They're doing a mail-in ballot. New Hampshire is actually being sanctioned by the Democratic National Committee for their sort of, recalcitrance, and they're pushing forward in having a primary. President Biden removed himself from the ballot because he does not want them to go first. And so neither of those states will offer much in terms of hoopla for President Biden's reelection campaign, but we'll move on to South Carolina, and we'll move on to Nevada and all the other states. And while there are people like Representative Phillips who are trying to challenge him from inside the party, at this point there's no concern that he won't receive the nomination.
We're talking to Kathleen Dolan, Distinguished Professor of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee, co-editor-in-chief of the American Journal of Political Science, looking at the Iowa caucus outcome on the Republican side of things. There wasn't one for the Democrats, and the future of the race for the nominations in both parties. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Debbie is with us in Madison. Hi, Debbie.
Hi. I'm a little nervous, but I don't call in too often, but I'm a Republican, and I really don't, that's one select group that have nominated him in the Iowa caucus. I don't put much stock in it. But what I do say is I'm very concerned that Trump will be our nominee, and I want to hear from some thoughtful, good Republicans. And I don't. And I'm probably going to change. Obviously, I'll change my vote if it's Trump on the ballot. But this is a man that's a danger to our world, period. It's unbelievable what we're seeing. And it's frightening. So that's all my comment.
Debbie, thanks a lot for the call. Kathy, I think all along, even since 2015, there have been some Republicans in Debbie's camp got concerned about Donald Trump. not enough of them apparently to make a difference. And then the Liz Cheney's of the world who do push back on Donald Trump, well, out of a job, at least out of the job of, as a member of Congress.
Yes. No. What Debbie articulates is not, you know, she's certainly not alone there in Madison feeling that way. But Governor, former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, you know, would argue that he has tried his best to be the voice that Debbie wanted to hear. And there just simply aren't enough Republicans like Debbie who want to hear it to vote for him. Certainly, you know, Governor DeSantis and former Ambassador Haley have tried to push back against former President Trump a little bit, but not in taking him on directly. Former Governor Christie was really the only candidate in the race who was willing to try to speak to the danger that Christie believes former President Trump represents for our system. But there simply aren't enough takers. Now, you know, Debbie says that the results in Iowa do not, for her, confirm that former President Trump is on the path to the nomination. And she is absolutely right to wait and see what happens, because 110,000 people have voted and only half of those people chose the former president. So we really should heed that idea and not look toward this as any kind of determinative outcome. But, you know, as we look at public opinion polls nationally and as we look at polls in the various states that are coming next, the issue is, as I said, you know, sort of by early March, if we have seen momentum where state by state the former president is winning, you know, then the momentum may well carry him to this nomination. But it is the case, as you say, that there have been people who have said never Trump since the beginning, and there simply are not enough of those people to deny him the nomination.
Debbie, thanks for the call. And Kathy, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Kathleen Dolan is Distinguished Professor of Political Science at UW-Milwaukee and co-editor-in-chief of the American Journal of Political Science. She was with us for a look at the results of the Iowa caucuses and what it all means for the Republican nomination process going ahead as we head into this big election year.